afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. We're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, August 12th, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi there, Melody.
That's a hot and muggy one here on the Eastern Shore. I'm not sure if Pennsylvania is carrying the same, if you're in the same heat wave
we
as
got
we are.
Triple digits as we speak.
Yes. But you know what? It's summer. It's going to be gone soon. So actually, I'm loving it. I love it. So anyway, let's go ahead and see if gold was loving this little bit of a heat wave. Well, if you consider $1.30 a heat wave, $1,754. Silver, not so much, down 35 at $23.28. Platinum was down $2 at $1,026. Palladium was down 10, $2,710. The USDX today, of course, was stronger by 0.08 at 93.00. Crude oil today was down 27 cents at 68.98. And the paper markets today, hectic day, trying to get everybody done and out with the new design of the gold and silver eagles. I like the old design better, to be honest with you. But the Dow was up 14 points at 35,499. The S&P was up 13 at 4,460. NASDAQ was up 51, 14,816. 10-year yield unchanged, 1.35. Europe, see what the Europe markets did. Come on, bring up here. FTSE was the only one that was negative. And Asia, they were all negative. So the major ones anyway. So there you have it. And, you know, it's just so funny that everybody thinks that the Fed's going to reverse their easy policy soon. That is just really kind of funny. I guess they'll do anything and say anything to pitch whatever they want to pitch. But anyway, it's Thursday. It's Thursday for our, drum roll please, the new jobless claims. Yes, they fell. You got it. Thursday means another government jobs report. And the initial jobless claims declined for the third consecutive week. And 375,000 last week as of this morning. Estimates weren't that far off. Jobless claims numbers have come down since spring. They're now settling around this 400,000 level. And actually, the four-week average is about 396 initial claims. So now this report reflects just the first week of August. And, of course, it came after a week of the July jobs report that showed a bigger-than-expected gains in employment. So, but there is also a record-high number of open jobs at the end of July. So I wonder what the number was for open jobs in January of 2020, I wonder. The end of 2019.
Oh, at the end of 2019.
And I wonder what that was.
A lot less.
At
the end of the program.
Yeah, but our unemployment percent. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I like where you were going there.
Yeah. Well, it's that new math.
Yeah. Yeah, new, imaginary, as it were.
As old Bush called it, fuzzy math.
Voodoo. We'll call it voodoo math. Yeah. Eligibility of unemployment benefits and their payouts were expanded during the pandemic as businesses were forced to close. More than half the states have already ended the expanded program. 26 to be exact, while the national program set to expire on Labor Day. The number of insured unemployment claims, a measure of continuing jobless claims, fell to 2.87 million. That's the lowest since mid-March of last year, just as the pandemic was exploding. A broader measure of continued unemployment, which includes pandemic-specific benefits and other programs, also declined from the previous week. The state of labor recovery has been a key metric for, well, institutional investors in particular, as inflation has been running hotter than the past several years. More than a handful of Fed governors now say that a strong jobs report in August and September could lead the Fed to slow its bond purchases in the fall. I don't believe that, Melody, but I guess we will see. The Ides of August soon upon us in three more weeks.
Yes, we shall see. Well, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, how the cash freight, the cost of shipping of the freight. The cash freight index for July that was released this morning showed volumes of goods being shipped by truck, car, rail in North America, and we're returning back to normal of a consumerist nation, I guess. As we spoke yesterday, the cost of the shipping still remains elevated. You'd think it would bring it down, Dave, but hey, freight shipment volumes were 15.6% higher than the same period last year, and they were higher than in July of 2019 by 0.5%. Shipments declined 3%, though, from June. So the volumes were higher, but the shipments declined from June. The recent slowdown you see in July is going to have to be made up as we get towards the holiday season because the U.S. consumer balance sheet's very strong. So there's a high, and that's what I was told too, that there isn't going to be the holiday season products will be very slim. That's what I was told because there's so many problems that they're having in Asia. And they're pretty, then there was word that they wouldn't be able to fill any of these orders for the holidays. But I always thought, Dave, that most of your holiday products come in August and September. So,
well, my wife has told me, she told me this last weekend, she said, whatever you're getting me for Christmas, better get it for me in October. I think she's seeing the same thing that you're hearing, Melody.
Yeah, and it's because there's so many factories in, you know, Vietnam and all these other, all of Asia that they're holding, and they were told to hoard. And we haven't seen anything yet as far as supply disruption. So this guy, Tim Denoyer of ACT Research, so there's a high savings rate. There's a low inventory to sales ratio for the retailers. It suggests that there's a lot of freight ready to come in, but that still remains to be seen. Expenditures, a measure of the cost of shipping, was 22.7% higher than in July, 43% higher than in 2020. Anything else, Dave?
Well, Bernstein Transportation analyst Dave Vernon says the July report indicates that supply chains, especially trucking routes, are still disrupted. He said for companies in the food industry, companies in the retail industry that use a lot of trucks in their supply chain, it's just going to mean there's going to be margin pressure. He says to think about a box of cornflakes. The trucking cost of a box of cornflakes is actually pretty meaningful because you can't fit that much on a truck. If those rates start to go up, it is a pretty big impact on the input costs across a number of industries. So, interesting numbers yesterday and today with freight.
Well, you know, something else, wholesale levels, inflation, that jumped a higher than expected 1% in July. It was actually matching the rise from the previous month. And again, it brings a lot of question to that word transitory. Mm-hmm. Prices at the wholesale level over the past 12 months are up a record 7.8%. This is the largest increase going back to 2010. 2010. And the back-to-back monthly increases in the PPI, which measures price pressures before they reach you, the consumer, were the most sizable since a 1.2 rise in January. Now, this latest data on this rise in producer prices come about a day after the government reported that there was some evidence of slowing in price hikes at the retail level. We always kind of chuckled at that one. And so, I don't know, Dave. Retail prices over the past year are up a notable 5.4%. And
so says the government.
The government would not lie to us, right?
Using current updated, I hate to use the word updated, modified, manipulated methodologies.
Lie.
Seems more appropriate. I mean,
bottom line.
Lie. Since 1990 methodologies. You go back to 1980, where they're even more comprehensive and more inclusive. The inflation number is higher, but using 1990, you're at 9% compared to 5.4. It's a significant difference, especially when you're talking in the context of gold and what ought to be moving the price of gold. It really is astounding, even though we know the manipulation that's going on by the mainstream paper movers and ETFs. But think about it in terms of inflation-adjusted interest rates. With even 5.4% interest on 5.4% inflation, excuse me, on interest rates of virtually zero. I mean, we're already significantly into the negative category on a real inflation-adjusted basis. But I mention this now, Melody, just because I don't want to get too far off the track, but people were starting to see stories about the presumed rise in interest rates over the next few years. And, you know, with whether it be the 10-year, however you want to measure it. But even if interest rate, the Fed raises the Fed funds rate, let's say, to a crazy 5%. It's not going to get there. I'm not sure I'll ever get there again, but certainly I'm going to get there the next 5, 10 years, barring some calamity, which who knows if that's possible. But even at that rate, if you look at real inflation at 9%, we're still well into the negative range. And yet, you know, that now these so-called pundits are talking about, well, rising interest rates, even if it goes to 2 or 3 or 4%, and inflation settling back down to 2, they view that as extremely bad for gold. When in reality, the real trend is a downward sloping real rate. So, I mean, in terms of the opportunity cost that people talk about all the time as a reason for owning gold compared to, say, bonds, it's right there. But the lying just really obscures what's really going on in the marketplace, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it certainly does. And, you know, we have corporate America. We talk about this all the time. There's a government price report shows how corporate America is coping with higher inflation. By guess what? They're raising prices. Companies are charging more for everything, from diapers to auto parts. And guess what? Their profit margins have never been higher. As a result, quarterly profit reports from the S&P 500 companies in the last couple of weeks, they've blown past expectations. You know, of course, those Wall Street expectations, you know, sometimes they bring them out a little bit lower just so they are beaten. But, so again, this is all helping to support record high stock prices. No one worries about those valuations that maybe they've shot too high. or who knows what's coming if they decide to shut the economy back down. Tyson Foods, they have to contend with higher costs for grain that feeds their chickens. And there's other sources of inflation, yet its profits still leaped 42% in its latest quarter over the prior year. I mean, that's incredible. A lot of this was because pricing for chicken rose 16% during that quarter. And then they have the nerve to come out and say, we're just simply asking for a fair market value for these products. You know what? May the chicken. I mean, like, are you kidding me?
Slap that man with a rubber ducky.
I think so.
A rubber chicken, excuse me.
Rubber chicken that squeaks. But anyway, I mean, it's just like, you know, but across the S&P 500, such moves, you know, companies appear to hold on to $13 a profit for every 100 they make.
Wow.
And so.
It's a good margin.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, good margin.
Yeah. So,
the last 5 years, that's averaged $10.60.
Yep.
There's another $2.40. That's, well over 20% higher.
Uh-huh. Yes, correct.
And now, you know, with higher overall sales on top of the profits, earnings for S&P 500 companies last quarter are on track to double from just 1 year ago. That'd be the strongest growth since the economy bounced back from, yes, the Great Recession. About 90% of companies in the S&P 500 have now reported their results for the first quarter. Second quarter is well underway, that reporting. We see the strengths in earnings and profit margins. One reason strategists at a number of Wall Street banks are raising their targets for the S&P 500 to close at a high of 4,700, up from 4,300. But the coast is not clear, ladies and gentlemen. Executives are talking more often about having to raise pay now for their workers, and especially to attract new workers to fill those millions of vacancies we're reading about. And that kind of inflation can be a lot more difficult for companies to handle and control. No one expects companies to keep doubling profits. Kind of say this past quarter was likely the easiest of this rebound or recovery, whatever you want to say. So we will see what happens from here.
Hey, I hear the music. We're heading into break. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Airlines, we talked about those yesterday, and it seems like their fares are edging lower. I don't know about the international travel is increasing. It's actually being discouraged by the CDC. I don't know. Southwest Airlines, they announced bookings have slowed down. Cancellations have picked up, all being blamed by COVID. Airplane tickets represent a relatively small component of what most people spend on. It's been among the categories seeing the largest increases in recent months, though, Dave.
Well, that's because prices were unusually depressed last year, and supply has lagged demand in this category as many others as the economy reopened. Airfares fell just a tenth of a percent month over month in July, and coming after a 2.7 jump in June and a 7% surge in May. Prices are up 19% from July 2020 levels here. TD Securities chief macro strategist Jim O'Sullivan pointed out the recent degree of strength in prices was unlikely to continue indefinitely. Just today's report suggests this slowing now may be happening a lot quicker than expected. I forget where Edgerton's from. Do we say? No, another economist pointed out that airline fares are still about 10% below their pre-pandemic levels. So if prices are to climb again, they'll likely do so at a more moderate pace, Melody.
You know, it cracks me up because you see all these, the prices are lower, the prices are lower, the prices are lower, and so forth. But when you go price something out, it's kind of like lower from what?
Yeah.
You know? I've been checking some prices on various things, and it's like, no, they're higher. I think they're higher than what they were.
Yeah, I don't see anything
No.
Lower, especially airfares.
Airfares? I mean, I was actually looking on pricing for cruises just to see what the deals were. And I've been doing it just to do a comparison, just to see what they haven't gone down. They're higher, literally higher than what they have been in the past. And it's just, how do they get away with it? How do they get away with saying the prices from, I guess they can do like any comparison. They can do go back and check dates, and maybe they have one date where for some reason the prices were really low, maybe a special, and maybe they use that as a comparison. I don't know, but I'd like to see what they use in order to determine that it's 10% below pre-pandemic levels. To some degree, I would think it should be more than 10%, because I just can't imagine that many people are flying. From everyone that tells me that I've been to airports, there's hardly anyone there compared to what's been, in the past. So I don't know. This is puzzling. The White House comes out and they want OPEC to pump more oil. Too bad we can't do it here in the States. Can it? No, we got to ask OPEC to pump more oil in an effort to contain gasoline prices. And I guess there's some experts out there that are just as puzzled as I am. And I don't know, Dave. It's just, you have the summer driving season. It's coming to an end. So the demand should taper off. You know, then you have heating oil. It's going to be a changeover from driving to heating. So I don't think, to me, since there's the petrodollar, I always have to go back to why the real reason why OPEC pumps oil for the U.S., and it always comes back to the dollar. So,
well, it is interesting. I mean, people were worrying a lot more about oil prices a month ago when WTI, domestic crude prices, you know, breached through the $75 a barrel mark and then seemed headed quickly toward 90. And then OPEC Plus agreed to increase production by 400,000 barrels a day starting this month. And that put at least a temporary end to oil's upward price momentum. But gasoline prices at the pump have been rising. According to AAA, the national average is now $3.18 a gallon, up from $3.14 a month ago. And, $2.17 a year ago. So, on one hand, while the sitting president, whomever he is often blamed when gas prices go higher, one focus group conducted the other day shows that prices are not a top-of-mind issue among likely voters anyway. None of the voters in the focus group, in fact, said the price of gas would motivate them to vote for or against a candidate. I think they were talking about next November's midterm election. So interesting why Biden would be on this push. Wouldn't be surprised if we see a pullback from that in the coming days.
We talk a lot about the Fed, of course. They shouldn't be there. But anyway.
Our reason for being.
If we didn't have a Fed, we wouldn't be doing this program. If we had real money backed by gold, we wouldn't be doing this program. Wouldn't that be great? Mm. That would be awesome. We wouldn't have to do this program. And his term expires in February.
Who's?
Jerome Powell's.
Oh.
The Fed chair guy.
Yeah, I remember
and that. Yeah, so not sure if he'll be reappointed. There's a couple of other appointments that are being considered. And I'm not sure. Do you know who those are?
Well, there's several. I mean, it's the ones that are being mentioned most often, besides a reappointment of Powell, is Lyle Brainard, fellow Fed board governor. In fact, while in a recent unscientific survey by the company predicted the respondents, 73, roughly three quarters of the respondents think that Powell will be reappointed. A little over a quarter say Brainard will. And the rest, and these are the other top, the other three that make, I guess, round out a top five. Rafael Bostic, Atlanta Fed Prez, lawyer and former Fed Governor Sarah Bloom Baskin, or former Vice Chair of the Fed Roger Ferguson. Now, Bostic and Ferguson are African American, Sarah Bloom Baskin, obviously a female. So, you know, to the extent the appointment calculus is going to be based on gender or race, well, then those Brainerd probably is the top female contender, I believe. She happens to be a registered Democrat, I believe, like Baskin is. But I think Biden, Melody, is going to wait, even though there's going to be a lot of pressure for him to do it right after Labor Day. I have a feeling he's going to wait until later in the fall, get a couple of more months of GDP, inflation, and other unemployment numbers, see how the economy progresses. And by then, the political calculus of reappointing Powell, who's a registered Republican, or a woman or person of color instead, they'll know by then how that's playing out in the polls. And even though we can say with concrete confidence, that's not a good way at all to pick a person of this level of importance, that's the way it is.
Well, you know, I mean, hey, that's the, I don't know what you want to call it. That's what they do. And I think it will be Brainerd, because she's always being quoted everywhere. She's everywhere, you know? So that's who I would think he would reappoint Powell with. They're not going to keep a Republican in there. There's just no way.
Brainerd out on the pre-nomination tour.
Yeah. Yep. That's what I believe. But anyway, buy now, pay later. These are loans that could affect your credit. And if there's people out there, when they move into a new apartment or something, particularly when you're young, they opt to buy some household items through the buy now, pay later. Some of those providers are Affirm, Klarna, Afterpay. So then rather than paying one lump sum or putting it on a credit card, he opted to split up the cost of his exercise gear, or people do, and make installments. And there's supposed to be 0% interest. And the buy now, pay later loans also are known as point of sale loans. It offers consumers the ability to pay off their purchases over a fixed period of time with installments payments to typically due biweekly or monthly. And I think we talked about this before. They used to be called AOA.
Yeah.
QVC allows you to do this to where you do get your product. You make the first payment, then you get to take, they'll ship you your product and you can make other payments. And, there's a report that predicts that this industry is going to grow 10 to 15 times its current size by 2025. So what's that going to do to credit card companies and banks?
Well,
don't you usually end up paying more for that product? Because
how so? I don't know. I haven't done a whole lot of research on this, but to the, not all of them though, and this is where you might pay more, is that not all of these POS loans, or, you know, BNPL, however you want to call them, pay 0% interest. Some of them are charged. Some of them charge more interest. But here's the point. If you miss a payment with some of the providers, not all of them. Some of the providers don't report to credit agencies. But some, if you miss a payment, even at 0% interest, that can be noted on your credit report for up to 7 years, and it's going to negatively impact your credit score. It's still key that if BNPL is still a loan, it's still a commitment you've entered into, whether it be for 1 year, two, five, or however long. So don't enter into it lightly, ladies and gentlemen, or tell your family to do the same. It can be, you know, just, it can be a trick. at least, you know, with the old layaways, you know, you're paying off an item over time, but you're not getting it. It doesn't have the same effect on your credit as a missed BNPL payment could. Now, some say that after the entire loan, BNPL loan is paid off, it can have a positive impact on your credit report, just like paying off another loan, auto or consumer loan on time can as well. But remember, I mean, you always should consider the worst case scenario, downside. You default or make late payments, you're going to risk decreasing your credit score. And that's not good for your wallet.
You know, the Afghanistan, there's things that are, it's really incredible what's happening over there. But now the Afghans are blaming Pakistan for Taliban success. And the U.S., it was just announced earlier today that they're deploying 3,000 troops to evacuate the Afghan embassy staff as the Taliban advances. I also read where I could think Europe, I don't know if it was Europe or England, the U.K., that was sending troops over there also to bring their people home. And it just really is incredible that they've got 2/3 of that of Afghanistan in Taliban power. I mean, it's incredible how quick. So, you know, my question is, what was really happening for 20 years? You know, what was happening all those years? And it just took this short period of time. I mean, they weren't. And what happened to the treaty, Dave? Wasn't there a treaty in the last administration with the Taliban?
Yeah, I forget if it was if it rose to the level of a treaty. I don't recall it having been approved by the Senate, but there certainly was an agreement that was that had been negotiated for well over a year. In a separate country. I forget if it was if they were negotiating in the Middle East. Now I'm cloudy on the details, but after all the efforts, multi-country efforts that went into those negotiations, the Taliban, I mean, they ripped it up the moment, I'm sure, they heard the Americans were out of there.
Yeah. I hear the music. We're out of here, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TimUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's in the office taking care of client orders and phone calls this last segment. You can call her at 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Well, it's time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. And this week's topic is, well, dreams coming true. More than three decades, 32 years, in fact, after one of my top five all-time movies, Field of Dreams, seeped into the country's cultural consciousness, one of the most famous cornfields in Hollywood history, is finally getting the opportunity to host real Major League Baseball. I'm sorry. Some regular listeners of Financial Survival know that I'm an avid sports fan, and it's baseball season, so baseball has the bulk of my attention right now. But is this heaven? The ghost of John Kinsella asked in the movie that inspired tonight's game, that's going to be played between the Chicago White Sox and New York Yankees, next to the actual site used in the 1989 film, which is maintained as a tourist attraction. And to that question, is this heaven, dutiful farmer Ray Kinsella answered, no, it's Iowa. It's played by Kevin Costner. He was responding to his mystical father with a smile before they played catch under the lights in the movie's most poignant and tear-jerking scene. This week, the ball playing isn't fiction, however. Shoeless Joe Jackson and then other long-ago players who took the field in the movie will be replaced by Jose Abreu and Aaron Judge. Now, the proud Midwestern state, usually only in the spotlight every 4 years during presidential campaigns, will be hosting a Major League Baseball game for the first time ever. That's when the White Sox and Yankees play at this temporary venue built for about 8,000 fans in tiny Dyersville, population 4,400, roughly. At least that's what they're hoping for in this census, according to Mayor Jim Heavens, ironically. The event, part of MLB's increased effort to grow the game by setting up shop in places without in-person access to the highest level of the sport, has been in the works for years. The original plan to play last year was postponed, obviously, when the pandemic forced a shortened schedule at almost all empty parks. But if the White Sox, the Yankees, or Iowans became impatient then, they were out of step with the spirit of the film. The one constant through all the years, I wish I had his voice, as the sage author Terrence Mann, played by James Earl Jones, declared to Ray Kinsella, has been baseball. The one constant through all the years has been baseball. Dyersville found its place on a map through the movie that starred Costner, Jones, Ray Liotta, and Amy Madigan, but the sport has been entrenched in the town for more than a century. Commercial Club Park is where the team from Beckman Catholic High School and the local semi-pro club play, a spot as much at the heart of the community as the well-kept farms around it. And about one-third of the crowd tonight is expected to be Iowa residents. Mayor Heaven said, I think there's a real element of pride in Iowa that MLB is coming. It's kind of warmed my heart to see that the people of Iowa are so honored that this is happening here. The original movie site was deemed too small for a standard game, So the made-for-the-moment ballpark required removal of 30,000 cubic yards of material and the installation of 4,000 tons of sand, 2,000 tons of gravel. It's a lot of dirt. Bullpens were designed to mimic those at Old Comiskey Park, home of the White Sox. There's even a just-for-fun corn maze right behind right field. This has been an especially hot and dry summer in this part of the country, so an irrigation system was even installed to keep the prime crop in good shape for its time on primetime national TV. Between 10 and 12 feet high, that corn is. Just about everything about this event is unique. Both teams will wear throwback uniforms, harkening back to 1919, when Jackson played for the White Sox and was one of eight players who were banned for fixing the World Series. The history of that team is one of the many themes woven into a film that transcends sports. The White Sox and Yankees were also two favorite teams of the John Kinsella character in the movie at different points of his life. The game is on Fox Sports tonight, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And that is this week's Levity is Golden. To a more serious topic, actually one of my favorites that I spend time on outside of this program and writing for American Survival and what a Rush of Gold and Silver blog. Redistricting, legislative redistricting season officially kicked off today with the release of detailed population data from the Census Bureau, data that will be used to redraw voting districts nationwide. And a number of analysts say that will help determine control of particularly the U.S. House in 2022 elections and providing an electoral edge for the next decade. The new data released today show which counties, cities, and neighborhoods gained or lost the most people in the 2020 census. That's going to serve as the building block to redraw 429 U.S. House districts in 44 states and nearly 7,400 state legislative districts across the country. The official goal is to ensure that each district has roughly the same number of people. You know, the good old one man or one person, one vote concept. But many Republicans and Democrats will be operating with another goal in mind, unfortunately, to try to ensure that the new lines divide and combine voters in ways that make it more likely for their party's candidates to win future elections, a process called gerrymandering, where the elected people choose their voters. Or voters instead of voters choosing their elected representatives. Both parties' successes in that effort could determine whether taxes and spending grow or fall and for whom, what climate change policies are approved or not, or if access to abortion is expanded or curtailed. Republicans, we know, need to gain just five seats to take control of the U.S. House in next November's elections, a margin that could potentially be covered through artful redistricting. David Wasserman, who's an analyst for congressional races at the Cook Political Report, says redistricting really is the ballgame this cycle in the House. Even tiny changes to district lines could have huge implications that tip the balance of power. Now, as they did after the 2010 census, Republicans will hold greater sway in the redistricting process than Democrats. The GOP will control redistricting in 20 states, accounting for 187 U.S. House seats, including the growing states of Texas, Florida, Georgia, and North Carolina. By contrast, Democrats will control redistricting in just eight states, accounting for 75 seats, including New York and Illinois, where the loss of a seat in each gives them a chance to squeeze out Republican incumbents. In 16 other states, accounting for 167 of the rest of the U.S. House seats, districts will be drawn either by independent commissions or by politically split politicians or their representatives, with legislative chambers led by one party and governors of another. my state, Pennsylvania, I count among the latter. Six states, Alaska, Delaware, Montana, the two Dakotas, Vermont, and Wyoming, have just one House seat each, so there are no district lines there to be drawn at the federal level, that is. States with a significant population shift provide some of the best opportunities for the parties to gain an advantage through redistricting. They can add a favorable district, eliminate one held by their opponent, or redraw a competitive district to contain a more comfortable majority of supporters. In Texas, where Republicans hold 23 of the 36 U.S. House seats, fast growth in suburban Houston, Dallas, and Austin helped the state gain two seats in the new round of redistricting. That growth has been driven by the migration of the young, Latino, Black, and college-educated residents, all typically core Democratic constituencies, at least according to Kelly Ward Burton, who heads of the National Democratic Redistricting Committee. She said, if you look at how the population has shifted over the decade and you draw a map that's consistent with that, Democrats gain seats. He added, Republicans in charge of redistricting could draw maps that split up those Democratic-leaning voters, adding some to predominantly Republican districts to give the GOP a shot at winning even more seats in a state like Texas. In Florida, which is also gaining a U.S. House seat, Republicans could use redistricting as an opportunity to redraw lines in rapidly growing central Florida to try to ensure that Democratic-held seats have more GOP voters. Democratic reps Charlie Crist in St. Petersburg and Val Demings in Orlando, who I believe is running for the U.S. Senate, are pursuing gubernatorial and U.S. Senate bids respectively, yes, leaving those districts without incumbents and making them obvious targets for reshaping. And after the 2010 census, Republicans who controlled redistricting in far more states than Democrats than this time around drew maps that gave them a greater political advantage in more states than either party had in the previous 50 years. But I note that Republicans won't hold nearly as much power as they did last time, especially in some of the key states. For example, Republican-led legislatures will be paired with Democratic governors. And again, my state of Pennsylvania, as well as Wisconsin, which both had full GOP control after the 2010 census. And in Michigan, a voter-approved citizens commission will handle redistricting this time around instead of lawmakers and the governor. And in Ohio, voter-approved redistricting reforms will require majority Republicans to gain the support of minority Democrats for new districts to last a full decade. So this year's redistricting process is going to be conducted on a compressed timeline. States are getting the data more than 4 months later than originally scheduled, mainly because of issues related to conducting the census during the pandemic. It means map drawers will have to work quickly to meet their constitutional deadlines in some states or seek judicial approval to take longer. In many states, new districts are likely to face lawsuits as political parties continue jockeying for the best possible maps. We know after the 2010 census, redistricting lawsuits lasted for much of the following decade and actually led to significant changes in some states. Democrats gained a total of 11 seats in the U.S. House after U.S. courts struck down Republican-drawn districts in four states and ordered new ones between the 2016 and 2020 elections. If nothing else, it's going to be a very interesting process this time around. And we here at Financial Survival will be keeping our eyes peeled on how it evolves in the coming months and let you know what's going on, if there's anything that you as a citizen should and can be doing, especially to deal with party shenanigans. Now, just sort of an epilogue story on unemployment to finish up today's program. The Labor Department's pumping $240 million into the nation's unemployment system to fight ongoing fraud. It's part of a broader effort to fix flaws in the system, which we talked about here on Financial Survival, that were exposed by the pandemic. Criminals have targeted unemployment benefits at a high, even unprecedented rate since spring of last year, after federal lawmakers significantly expanded the safety net for the jobless. But they continue to do so and frequently use new tactics to try and steal money. Michelle Evermore at the Labor Department in Washington says what we're seeing now is really terrifying. Fraud has gotten so big. It's unclear exactly how much money's been lost to theft. Labor Department estimates about $87 billion in benefits may ultimately be paid improperly, a significant portion of that due to fraud. Of course, the pandemic programs are slated to end September 6th, right after Labor Day. Now, you know, Evermore says officials are seeing more fraudsters hijack the claims of legitimate applicants who need benefits. We'll be following that as well, ladies and gentlemen. But for now, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout for our weekly blog and your email inboxes after the sun next rises. I'm Dave Allant. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a good evening, and please be safe out there. Bye-bye. Have a plan. If I got me away.